The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yes, there are more chairs in here. I don't know, maybe half a dozen or so. this evening I'd like to start a series of talks, four evening talks, on concentration practice, samadhi. And these talks will be given, I won't be here the last Monday of January, so I'll give two talks, be away, and they'll come back and give them the second two, last two. And so I prefer the word samadhi to the word concentration for the topic we're going to talk about. And one of the reasons for that is that concentration lends itself to some people to becoming fixated in the mind in a narrow, pinpointed way, kind of having a laser in the control tower in your brain and then pointing that laser and keeping it fixated on something that you're looking at. And not a few meditators have gotten headaches from trying to cultivate concentration because of the narrow, tightening up kind of way they've tried to do it. And in fact, the concentration practice of Buddhism are meant to help produce a very soft, relaxed mind. And so you can't do this hard, fixated way of practicing goes against the grain of the efforts to have a soft, malleable, open, spacious mind. And I prefer the word samadhi because samadhi, you don't know, some of you don't know what this Indian word might mean, but it refers to a state. One of the meanings of it is a state of being that we enter into or abide in, whereas the word concentration doesn't as much speak to a state of being. It focuses more like a particular faculty of mind that we engage or, you know, focus our attention with. And so, but samadhi is a state of being. In India, especially in some of the non-Buddhist traditions, like Hinduism, sometimes samadhi is considered to be the ultimate, like almost like what we would, what Buddhists would call nirvana, sometimes are called samadhi in some Indian traditions, saying that it holds a very holds a very exalted place. It's considered something very special, and I think in Buddhism as well, samadhi is very important. I think it's quite a useful tool for the path of practice. And it's quite special to have enter into states of samadhi, deep meditative absorptive states. And they feel like gifts. I like to think of them as gifts. It's kind of almost like an act of grace when you enter into these deeper states. And so much so that I like to think that in approaching the topic of samadhi, as maybe with all Buddhist practice, that there be a sense of reverence for what we're working with, rather than a spirit of acquisitiveness. I know plenty of also meditators who read about, learn about concentration practice, samadhi practice, and they get kind of greedy or ambitious, or they get kind of like, you know, acquisitive. I want that. If I get that, then I'll be successful, and then everyone will be happy or with me or something. I don't know what they think, But there's an acquisitive kind of, you know, I'm going to get this kind of approach. But if there is a sense of reverence, you enter into a temple with reverence, kind of with a little bit, hopefully, a wise humility, a wise kind of sense that you're entering into something that's sacred. And so requires that as we enter into sacred space, that we carry ourselves, we bring ourselves to it with an attitude of care, attention, goodness, certainly not with greed, not with a lot of sense of self that we bring along, like this is all about me getting concentrated, and perhaps more of a sense of reverence, maybe a sense of being open to grace, being open to a gift, being open to just being humble about what we're up against. And it kind of works nicely because acquisitive, self-centered approaches also go against the grain for developing samadhi. It's much harder that way because being self-centered and being acquisitive requires a certain contraction of the mind or heart that goes in the opposite direction from the more relaxed, open, uncontracted state that is being cultivated. So for me, this thing, samadhi, is kind of like a sacred realm, a little bit. It's common in our school, our kind of tradition of Buddhism, to make a strong distinction between mindfulness practice and samadhi practice. And certainly it's possible to cultivate each of them in different ways. But there's also a very long tradition in Buddhism of integrating the two together. So the two work hand in hand. And that's kind of more my preference. I think by the way that I've practiced, the way that I like to teach, is a little bit more seeing them as being hand in hand, and they support each other. They work together. But there is a kind of, there are distinctions between mindfulness practice and samadhi, and one of the distinctions is between our objective experience and our subjective experience. Mindfulness practice tends to focus more on the objective experience we're having. So, if I ring the bell, mindfulness would tune in, experience the fullness of the sound as sound, and you'd be really feel the sound is there, and there's a knowing of the sound. So the sound is the object, and I know that sound, and that would be an act of mindfulness. Samadhi, being more subjective, might also hear the sound of the bell, but is not at all concerned about the source or it being an object out there, but is more interested in the subjective experience of what it's like to be hearing the sound. And so do we recognize the object, the source of the sound, this is the sound? Or, the two aren't that separate, subject and object, but we can kind of see the difference between the two. And the samadhi has more to do with tuning in to our subjective experience and cultivating and developing and changing that subjective experience in such a way that we get absorbed in whatever it is that we're concentrating on. So there might be an object that we're focusing on. Sometimes concentration practice is done on something like concentrating on the breath. And mindfulness practice can be done focusing on the breath. If you're doing mindfulness practice, more that side of it, you would be tuning in to the experience of breathing, all the different subtle changes and the change. You'd be able to identify the difference between the experience of the in-breath and the out-breath and the physical sensations going on. And you get closer and closer, more and more tuned in to the subtlety of the actual experience. In samadhi practice, the subtlety of the experience isn't that important. What's important is you still can maybe focus on the breathing, but what's important is as you focus on it, you're holding the attention there to some degree, is that you're cultivating a very open and receptive and expansive state of being. And so the subjective experience of how you are is what is important. I think many people have the experience of doing something in their life where they get absorbed in what they're doing, and sometimes so much so that they don't hear anything around them. So some people have been involved reading books or novels, and they get so absorbed in the book that they don't really know the time, they forget their troubles, someone might even be talking nearby and they don't even register that someone's talking, and because they're so absorbed and pulled in. And that generally, or doing a craft. Some people really enjoy doing a craft or playing music, and they get absorbed in that activity, or playing a sport. So they get completely involved, completely absorbed in that activity, and the involvement is so full, we say well, they're absorbed in it, and which means that they don't necessarily paying attention to many other things they could be paying attention to at that time. So samadhi, the state of focus or concentration of samadhi, is as it develops, is a state of being absorbed in that way, where we're completely involved with something, and we're not fragmented, we're not pulled away, we're not mind is not scattered or easily distracted, but is really right there. So if you have in a state of samadhi with your breathing, you would be as absorbed in the experience of breathing as you would be reading a really good book. And someone could even knock on your door and you don't even hear it sometimes, maybe. Someone comes knocks on the door when you're in samadhi and you don't hear it because you're so absorbed in that experience of breathing. For some people it makes sense, maybe, to get absorbed in a good book. Maybe you have that experience because books are interesting. There's all this drama and excitement in the book. But you're breathing? You know, just breathing in, breathing out. You do that a few times and you get the idea. What's the big deal? How could you have the same state of absorption? Not only can you have the same state of absorption, you can actually get more absorbed, enter into deeper, deeper states of calm and concentration on something like the breath than you can with the book. Book will only take you so far because the book actually requires a fairly active involvement of involved form of mental activity that keeps the mind somewhat busy, that then prevents it from dropping into the deeper levels of samadhi that requires the mind to become really still. But it's still, it's the path is this absorption. So it has to do with our subjective experience, which is hard sometimes to make that switch because our thinking is often about our objective experience. We're thinking about something, what happened yesterday, what's happening tomorrow, what's happening at work, what should I have for dinner, why did this person tell me that terrible thing earlier in the day, I should have done better. You know, it's about something, it's thinking about something, and the survival kind of approach of the mind is often caught up in thinking to solve our problems, to figure things out, or go off into fantasy. But it's kind of thinking is often about something. It's a little bit objectifying the world so we can think about it. And it's a big switch to be willing to pull back or switch gears from the objective to really kind of savoring or settling into our subjective experience here and now. So here's a kind of an example, maybe, of, to kind of dramatically describe this distinction between getting caught up in our thoughts versus dropping them so we can really savor or feel, be present for the subjective experience without thinking about it. And that might be perhaps you're listening to really good music. Maybe you even paid a lot of money for some tickets or something for a symphony. It's really good music. Or perhaps you've paid a lot of money for a top-notch massage. Or it could be, maybe those two examples, which are kind of involve your sensory apparatus. You have to use your senses to feel the massage, your senses to hear the music. And so that's nice. You're doing this wonderful thing. But then you decide, what you really need to do right then and there during that experience is try to figure out what kind of potatoes to buy. Because you realize that one store has potatoes for sale. You can buy a whole bag of 50 pounds of potatoes at a certain price. Another store has a price of potatoes at 10 pounds, but they're like per pound more expensive. But if you get 50 pounds, can you really fit them in your refrigerator? How long can they last before they sprout and go bad? And maybe it doesn't make sense to buy 50 pounds because they'll actually be more expensive because you can't eat so many of them because they go bad. So what should you do? And so you might, give me a break. Give me a break. Is that what you want to do? Your mind goes off and thinks about potatoes. You could be there. You paid, all this money for the concert. And, you want to sit back and just take it in and really sense and feel it, right? But that contrast between the mind being involved in thoughts versus experiencing some part of human life which doesn't really, at the heart of it, the essence of it, does not involve thinking. Music, you can think a little bit about it, but it involves hearing and the sensual experience of hearing. Getting a massage, involves kind of the sensual experience that goes on in the body that I think if you tune into and present for works better than if you check out. And so to practice samadhi means to be willing to put to rest the thinking mind So the thinking mind is not the center stage. So the thinking, our thinking is not the main thing that we're doing. We're actually freeing up the energy of awareness, freeing up awareness, so it can fill non-cognitive our ability to non-cognitively take in, savor, feel, experience what's going on. So if you tune into your breathing, that's where you're getting concentrated, you wouldn't be thinking about your breath. You would be taking the thinking energy the best you could and using that energy of awareness, that awareness, to fill your, to enter into the experience of breathing, the sensual or the sensory experience of breathing. And your awareness fills that, rather than your awareness going into thinking and filling that experience. And you can kind of feel that difference or see that difference in your mind as you meditate, because sooner or later you might find yourself completely preoccupied in your thinking, lost in your thought. And then all your awareness has gone into your thinking. Other times you might still be thinking a little bit, but it's more very light, it's more in the background, and it's very clear that most of your focus of awareness isn't really taking in the immediacy of the felt experience of what's happening. So remember, again, to go back to the concert example, I don't hardly go to concerts, but many years ago, someone gave me tickets to go to a symphony. And it was kind of special to be there. And it was so, because I don't go hardly at all. The first half of the symphony, my mind was kind of racing, thinking, because I was, and I was making comments about everything I was seeing. It was so interesting looking, we looked down into the orchestra and, you know, I was looking at how many violinists are there and, you know, and I see that guy, one of those percussionists is not doing anything, just standing there. I wonder why he's just standing there and what's it like to be standing there and waiting and is he following the music or, you know, what's that like? And, you know, and that person doesn't seem to be looking at the conductor very often. I wonder, you know, maybe they know the piece really well or what's that about? So I was present, for sure, but you know, the person that gave me the tickets, you know, wasn't expecting me to be present, you know, to be having this commentary going on about, and I wasn't really listening to the music, and it was kind of bizarre. You're not going, wow, you know, I kind of shake my head, like, try again, you know, and so finally, at some point, this is crazy, I thought. So I closed my eyes, and closing my eyes, then I could stop the commentary and I could take in the experience of the concert. And then after a while I got settled, my mind settled down, and then I could open my eyes and I still would have some thinking going on, but it wasn't very much. And it wasn't interfering anymore with the music. Now the music was the dominant experience and thinking was the, you know, subordinate experience. So in meditation, especially in concentration meditation, the idea is to no longer have thinking the dominant experience, and let some other capacity we have for receiving experience, being present for our life, begin to predominate. And so the sensory, the non-cognitive, being present for, experiencing, taking in, feeling, sensing what's going on. And then to settle into that experience. Deepen our, you know, settle in and just be there and let it kind of, so we get this experience of being absorbed. So you with me a little bit? You absorbed in the talk? To help you understand a little bit what the state of samadhi is like, is that one of the common attributes or descriptions used for it is that it's a state of unification. And I like to say it's a state of being whole. If we're cut off from part of ourselves, or if we're fragmented or scattered, we're not really unified, we're not really whole. Or if we're holding part of ourselves, part of our experience at bay, pushing it away, we're not really whole. And it's kind of a magic or kind of a very special feeling to kind of let awareness grow and develop and fill us with samadhi, and so that we feel whole and unified. So here's an example for being scattered. We have many different psychophysical processes going on all the time. And so, for example, I could sit down to meditate, and my capacity to have an intention can kick into gear. My intention is to be sitting here and be really present for this moment, and maybe really be present for my breath. That's the intention. My mind is thinking about, I haven't had dinner yet, and it's coming, you know, it'd be nice to have a nice dinner, it's been a long day, and I wonder what I should have. And that one store is selling 50-pound potatoes. You know, so there's one thought, you know, thinking like that. But then I had a difficult day at work, and my boss, you know, was really upset with my performance. And so there's a kind of a little bit of feeling of fear and anger that's coursing through my body still. It hasn't left me. And so these emotions are still there. And I feel a little bit tense from that as well. And then, but then there's, you know, the people around me in the meditation hall are moving a little bit too much. And so then I can feel like my back is kind of being pulled up. I'm kind of self-righteous, you know, who are these people? And then, on the weekend, I hiked really hard, and my legs are sore, and my attention keeps getting pulled into these sore legs, which are screaming. So all these things are there, right? And so some of those thoughts are about the future, dinner, some are about the past, some of the emotions have to do with what happened before. There's my intention to sit here. There's the experience of being in a room with other people, and they're making noise, and I'm hearing that, and then it's my self-righteousness, and then I feel the tension, and then my legs are tired from my hike. And so, you know, probably all of you are getting a headache just listening to this and not getting concentrated. I apologize. I'm trying to use this as make a point, right? So this is an example of all the many ways in which the mind is scattered, goes off in many different directions, gets fragmented very easily. And that was just the tip of the iceberg of all the different things the mind can be involved in. And if you watch your mind, it's not so uncommon for human minds to be jumping a lot. A very interesting exercise is to sit down to watch your mind, let your mind do whatever it wants, and then try to get a sense of how often your mind, your attention, skips to new things. Like, are you just thinking about those potatoes and how much they're going to pay and which potatoes? That's like one topic, right? You know, you do that for 5 minutes at a time without interruption, or do you do it for, you know, 10 seconds and you think about work and then another 10, and your mind jumps over and something else, and then you wonder about the itch and is it cancer, and then your mind jumps very quickly to something else. And how quickly and how often is that jumping around happen? It's a very interesting thing to discover. How much does the mind jump, 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 jump? And you know, you have 6 jumps a minute? Do you have 60 jumps a minute? You know, how many jumps do you have? And so the mind can be scattered, it can be jumping around, it can be jumping around many different things. So we call that a scattered, fragmented mind. And the body also, in its own way, can be scattered and fragmented. And so what samadhi is beginning to harmonize all these different functions, all these different mental and physical processes that we have, so they're all operating for the same purpose. They're all operating in the same direction, the same focus. And that's one of the reasons why samadhi is so pleasant, because, and why something like the breath, which for a novice can seem like the most boring thing to look at, can end up feeling one of the most blissful things you could ever experience, just staying with the breath. It's because it's not the breath in itself that's wonderful, but what's really wonderful is this feeling of being unified, becoming whole. All these different parts of who we are come together and are working together in harmony. And you know, you're not jumping around anymore. You're just really there. You're focused on the breath. So your intention is with the breath. Your thinking, if you're thinking much, is with the breathing. You're not thinking about anything else. Your emotional mood and emotional state is in harmony or comes out of being present for the breath. And your physical experience is in harmony with focusing with the breath, being with the breath. And so emotionally, physically, intentionally, cognitively, and whatever other functions we have, they're all coming together and working together as a team. And so in Buddhism we call that unified, a unification of mind. And when the mind is unified, it becomes blissful. It becomes a strong sense of well-being can arise. So it's not the breath in itself that brings the sense of well-being, but rather the unified experience of being whole, being complete, that happens, that's there. And in addition, to kind of get a better sense of the sense of well-being, is that most of the stress that people experience, most of the distress that people experience, has a lot to do with the stories we tell ourselves, the thoughts that we're involved in. And so when we begin shifting the energy of awareness away from our thinking, so our thinking no longer predominates, and we're more and more here in our experience, and we're unified, so we're not thinking about something else anymore, the energy of and the stress of these difficult stories that we tell ourselves are no longer operating. We're not telling ourselves difficult stories anymore. And so, and without the suffering of these strain of these difficult stories, judgments, interpretations, identifications we have, then the mind's natural capacity for peace, for well-being, has a chance to surface. And there's waiting for you inside, not very far away, a tremendous amount, a kind of reservoir of peace and happiness that we can't really access very well if we stay caught up in the world of thinking, and especially if that thinking is bad news, you know, constantly giving bad news. So samadhi practice is a practice of learning to put that to rest, the thinking mind, or let it not be the predominant experience, and entering into this present moment experience in a fuller way with all our senses. So I call this kind of beginning to tune into our subjective experience, not just a thinking experience. And that subjective experience of being alive, subjective experience of being, begins to transform as we develop samadhi, because it becomes a state that we enter into. And there's a series of different states that people can experience, many different states. Some of these states that you enter into, samadhi states, are progressive, so that it's kind of like quantum steps, there are certain levels of samadhi. You enter one, and then at some point there's a shift, and you enter the next one. There's a shift, you can enter the next one. Shift, you enter the next one. And it's quite a fascinating journey. It's kind of amazing. Kind of inspiring, reverence-producing, to experience the deeper states of samadhi, especially because, at least it's my experience, that most of the time, for most people, certainly most of the time for me, entering into a state of concentration or samadhi is not something that I can do. What I do is create the conditions for it, and at some point it just something shifts inside and I enter into the deeper state. And so I create the conditions, but I don't make it happen. And so because of that, it feels more like a gift. Wow. You know, it's like this is really fortunate, this is really special. And so it's kind of like making yourself, so what are the proper conditions, the helpful conditions, to allow the samadhi to arise? So that's one of the things I'll talk about over these next weeks. We'll talk more about the practice of samadhi and some of the states we get into and how to work with it. What I'd like to say this evening still is to mention some of the purposes or functions of samadhi states. You know, why samadhi, entering into samadhi, is useful. And both people who practice mindfulness and people who practice concentration practice can experience a samadhi. Samadhi is not only the purview of people who do concentration practice. So what are the purposes of it? Why would someone be interested in samadhi? One purpose is that it steadies the mind. It stabilizes the mind. And a agitated mind, a fragmented mind that's jumping around a lot, is a mind which cannot focus very well at a task. It's also a mind that cannot see very deeply into our experience. You need to have a lot of stability in the mind to see clearly. And the analogy I like to use is that of, if you hold a telescope in your hand to look at an object far, far away, like if you look at the moon with a telescope, you can't really hold it still enough. It wobbles it just a little bit, right, but enough that you can't really stay focused on the moon or whatever. But if you put the telescope on a tripod, then you have the stability and you could hold the focus and see much clearly what's there. A very different analogy for this stability is that the mind becomes clear. It's not like the waters are no longer agitated and the waters become clear. And when the water is, when the surface of the water is still and the water is clear, then you can see into the bottom of the lake, maybe, or the pond. You can see what's there. So when the mind becomes still, stable, steady, we can see more deeply into our minds. And that's one of the purposes. So it's a great support for mindfulness practice because it helps us to see much more clearly. Another function of samadhi is healing. It's very healing to enter these states of samadhi, because strong sense of well-being that can well up, the sense of unification that can be there. To be unified, in order to get unified, we have to kind of empty ourselves or heal ways in which we're divided. And so you don't necessarily heal from all kinds of physical illnesses, but you can heal from all the psychological divisions that we have inside of ourselves, in psychological wars and conflicts we carry, the tensions that we build up. And it's remarkable how much physical symptoms are connected to the psychological tension and conflicts that we carry with us. And so some of this, sometimes they talk about concentration practice being a purification practice, because as you do it and you're becoming whole or unified, some of the various places we're not whole or we're broken or something begin to show themselves, and then they start to heal. Sometimes they heal because in the samadhi states, there's such a strong sense of well-being, of peace, of trust, that and safety in these states, that some of the difficult places in the heart and the mind can begin to relax, can let go. Finally, it feels safe. Oh, it's okay, I can really let go. It's okay, I don't have to hold on anymore. I don't have to stay gripped to these concerns I've been gripped in all the time. Some people have chronic fear. They carry fear with them all the time. And it's only an experience. See, samadhi is such a visceral, physical, kinesthetic, kind of embodied experience. To feel, have this holistic feeling of being well-being kind of suffuse your body, your pores, is very informative to that part of your musculature which is afraid and holding you tense and kind of cautious and looking around. Finally, wow, maybe it's okay to relax. It's kind of like you begin to thaw in the warmth of the samadhi state. So it's said that samadhi is very healing state. And that's why sometimes samadhi practices are given to people rather than mindfulness practice because of the healing effect that it has. The other reason, a function of samadhi practice, is that it makes the mind soft, very open, spacious, relaxed, malleable, pliable, some of the language that's used, imperturbable. And as the mind gets softer, the mind becomes more workable. You have more choices in the mind. You have more ability to shape the mind when it's softer. So the example I like for this is from many years ago. My son was in kindergarten. And every week on a particular day, the kids would work with beeswax, colored beeswax. And so they had a process to working with the beeswax in the classroom. The kids would go get the beeswax from the shelf, and then they'd go put it and cup it inside their two palms, put their hands together, and the beeswax. And so because the beeswax was cold and hard, and you can't really work it if it's hardened. they'd put it inside their hands, and the teacher would tell a story. And when the story was finished, the beeswax would be soft. And then they could shape it into something beautiful. So a mind which is gripped by its attachments and fears and resistances and preoccupations will over time become harder and harder. And you can't really work it. You can't really understand even, how do I let go? How do I relax? How do I, if we have some really deep, deep attachment that is really at the root of our personal challenges, we might not even know that we have that attachment because the mind is like hard beeswax. And you're aware that that there's a problem, but there's basically the mind is a black box. You don't know what's in there. As the mind gets softer and softer, then we can see more deeply what's there. It's no longer a black box. When we start softer and softer, at some point the mind can be shaped. The mind can be shaped with more concentration. It can be shaped with goodness. You can the role of intention, you can set resolves, have an intention, and the mind will kind of go along with that because it can be shaped. Let's do this. Let's do this activity. But more important, as the mind gets soft and softer and softer, then at some point the grip can relax. So if I hold my fists together forever, for a long, long time, at some point it's going to be very hard to open it up. But then at some point, if it thaws, and sometimes it gets loose enough, then finally I can open it. I've done that in the cold, right? Maybe some of you have done the cold. I'm out in the cold and it gets so tight I can't hardly move my fingers. But then you go into the warm room and slowly they begin to thaw until you can open them up. So same thing with the heart or the mind. As the mind gets softer and softer, more relaxed, more spacious, then it begins to, finally it's able to let go of some of the deepest attachments we have. And so some people know they're attached, but they don't know how to let go of it. Know they're clinging to something. But they have no clue where it's that. Because the mind is still too hard, like the beeswax. And you have to soften it. And the samadhi practice is a practice that softens the beeswax of the mind. Isn't that nice? The beeswax is all these different colors. It's quite beautiful, right? And then ultimately the purpose of samadhi in Buddhism is for liberation. And so, and this has to do with this idea of non-clinging. So to really have this mind that is very strong, the mind that is in samadhi is a very strong mind, even though it's very soft and relaxed. Maybe the analogy there is, I've known people who've done a lot of yoga who are extremely strong, but there's something about yoga and strength where the muscles actually look flabby, kind of. They don't have this big, they don't look like bodybuilders. There's something, I don't know what happens, maybe there's kind of a soft, relaxed way, but they're quite strong. So the same thing with the mind. The mind gets quite strong with samadhi, but at the same time, it's very relaxed and very open. So it's a very useful mind to have. You can apply it to all kinds of things. People who have a lot of samadhi tend to be much more efficient in their life. They tend to be able to do tasks, much more focus and work through things. Also, when the mind has this deeper capacity for stillness or samadhi, it tends also to be much more creative. It tends to have access to creative thinking, creative problem solving easier, and to intuition becomes much more accessible because the beeswax hard mind that's caught up in thoughts and preoccupied and jumping around, doesn't really have space or the ability to tune in to the deeper wellsprings of creativity, intuition that we have. So anyway, I guess I got a little sidetracked there. So the ultimate purpose in Buddhism for samadhi practice is to support us, support the mind, support the heart, to let go of every last possible contracted state that the heart and mind is capable of, to completely be set free. It's a beautiful thing, beautiful path. So samadhi. Samadhi is a wonderful state. How do we translate samadhi into English? The word samadhi. My personal preference is with the English word composure, to be composed. And partly it's, I'm allowed to do that because the etymology of the word samadhi, sam means same as kan, or kam, composure, with. And the D part of samadhi means to pose, to stand. And so that's, you know, the pose of composure means to stand, to pose. So, but what I like it is composure, concentration lends itself to the idea that we have the laser kind of focus from the mind. Composure is a unified experience of the whole being, I think. For most, at least for me, I associate with this, that I compose myself from my experience. So someone says, Gil, you compose yourself. I would probably do something with my body first and foremost. You know, kind of like, kind of sit up a little bit and relax and then kind of see, get to feel, make me feel kind of balanced with gravity sitting here, to compose myself in a dignified, present way. And so we're back to samadhi, we're composing ourselves on the breath. For example, and that's the object. I also like composing because we compose a piece of music, a piece of art. And so to compose ourselves on the breathing is to make ourselves into a piece of art, into a piece of music. Isn't that nice? So that's the introduction. So I'll give 3 more talks on this topic, and I hope that... you'll enjoy this journey of exploring samadhi. Thank you.